Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Swedish author and real-life Nazi hunter Stieg Larsson will never know the level of international fame he's reached. He died of a heart attack shortly after turning in three completed manuscripts for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, The Girl Who Played with Fire, and forthcoming in the U.S., The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest. But with his modern-day punkified and tattooed Pippi Longstocking heroine Lisbeth Salander, Stieg Larsson has taken the crime thriller world by storm. This hour on Point, the wild story of Stieg Larsson and the thriller trio that began with a dragon tattoo. You can join the conversation. Have you read them, met Lisbeth Salander on the page? And what is it about these Swedish thrillers that's made them such global bestsellers that draws readers in so? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Edward Kastenmeier. He's vice president, executive editor for Vintage Anchor Books, editor of Stieg Larsson's thrillers in American paperback. He founded and runs the crime division, Vintage Crime Black Lizard. Edward Kastenmeier, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Also with us from Gothenburg, Sweden, is Lasse Winkler. He's editor-in-chief of Svensk Bokhandel, Sweden's version of Publishers Weekly. He's been an investigative journalist himself and worked for Sweden's version of 60 Minutes. He conducted the only interview with Stieg Larsson about his books in the fall of 2004, shortly before Larsson's death. Lasse Winkler, thank you very much for being here from Sweden.
Thank you for having me as well.
So, first to the numbers, Edward, just to for those who haven't read or may not know, just to give a sense of the throw weight of these books worldwide, how many sales now?
30 million copies and counting.
30 million. I mean, that puts them up in the super league.
It does indeed. He's one of the best-selling writers of all time, obviously, and they've been hugely successful over the last year. It's been an amazing success, and throughout Europe, throughout, you know, in the United States now, and he's been translated into 44 different languages.
I didn't know much about the books at all, ran across them by accident, read a bunch, the movie version opening in the States, Swedish with subtitles this weekend. No doubt there'll be something all in English at some point. But what is it? Give us a sense of the story, Edward. What sets it apart from other thrillers? What do you think has been such catnip for readers who love it?
Well, I think that there are a number of things about it. One of the things you have to say is that Stieg Larsson was a working journalist in sort of the grand tradition, and that really comes through, that sense of his knowledge of the world and journalism and the subjects in which he's addressing come through very strongly. But I think the strongest part of the books are the two main characters. I mean, I've not met a single person who is not totally enthralled by Lisbeth Salander. She's a character we all sympathize with. I mean, here you have a 4'11", 90-pound punk heroine who's maybe borderline Asperger's, and yet she's the fiercest woman you will ever meet. And so I think she's a very powerful character, and she's sort of the consummate outsider. Swedish society has tried to keep her down since the age of 13. Her entire life has been very, very difficult, and she has always struggled and always fought back. In juxtaposition to Lisbeth, you have Michael Blomqvist, who had, you know, a sort of normal upbringing in Sweden, but came to the same issues that Lisbeth works on from a very different route. And so I think Lisbeth is someone we can all idolize and want to be. But I think most of us in our hearts are a little more like Michael Blomqvist, a man who works hard and fights hard, but has a much more normal response to the world around him.
Look, I thought they were terrific, but then I'm a journalist and I love the milieu of journalism where a whole lot of this is set, and I've got a ton of Swedes, you know, back in the family closet, so I'd love the setting as well. But Lasse Winkler there in Gothenburg, how did Swedes respond to this initially? Was this a big hit with Swedish readers when they first came out a handful of years ago?
Nobody knew how it was going to be accepted when it came out because the author was dead. They couldn't promote it like they normally did. But it all took... it broke away directly everybody spoke about this, the first book when it came out. Mm-hmm. I could see that when I was, you know, going to the store and shopping milk, or when I went to buy a book, or when I went to buy a CD, whatever, everybody spoke about these books. And it took on from the people, actually. One of the few books that did that.
The original title in Sweden of the first book, which called The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo Elsewhere in the World, was what? The Men Who Hate Women or something like that, Lasse.
Yeah, that was the idea from the beginning, and that is an idea that goes through all the books.
You've got a very exotic heroine in this pierced and tattooed and fiercely angry sort of a elf on a rage in Lisbeth Salander, but there's also a kind of moral rage or outrage that runs through all of these books from Stieg Larsson, the author. It seemed to me, Lasse, that he's a lot more fired up about political issues, about the abuse of women, about the sex trafficking, about pedophilia and pedophiles than most thriller writers I know. He has the tone, even though these are very gripping thriller stories, he has the tone of a political or moral crusader.
Yeah, that's what he was all his life. That's the way he worked as a journalist himself, as working with Expo, which was an anti-racist and anti-Nazist paper.
You did the last interview with him, the only really interview with him that touched on these books. Give us the setting for that. He had really written these books entirely before he took them to the publisher and then died before they were actually published?
Yeah, that's a long story. There is an interesting story how I came up on this. It was on that fall, 2004, just 2 months before he died. I met a common friend, a friend we had together, mm-hmm. a small publisher, or a publisher for a small publishing house. He said to me, we were sitting outside the Gothenburg Book Fair, and he said to me, I just read an author, three books that are going to conquer the world and pass Henning Mankell in when it comes to sales and popularity. Normally, at that time, Henning Mankell had sold about 20 million books worldwide.
Henning Mankell, another Swedish thriller writer with a very big global audience.
Yeah, and Edward is his publisher as well,
mm-hmm,
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
But when we sat there, normally you laugh at a thing like that, but I looked up at him and I said, I trust your knowledge, so I'll talk to Stieg Larsson. And I called him. That's why I got the interview, because there were no books out. They were not going to be published until 8 months later. And that's why I met him. And 2 weeks after I met him, he died.
Unbelievable. And so his books become a huge global sensation, and he's been described as a Nazi hunter because he was very active through his own magazine, Expo, which kind of parallels a magazine in the books, in what? Exposing racist, racial supremacist movements in Sweden, Lasse.
Yeah. And I was talking about that. He told me how he had lived for years and years, you know, looking behind him, and when he left home, sometimes he went out to the front door, sometimes to the back door, sometimes through the cellar, just not to be spotted by Nazis. And they really were after him. So he, in a way, he was kind of hiding, but still visible. And I told him, don't worry. When these books comes out, you're going to be famous and you're going to be immune to any Nazis trying to get you, because they can't. His response to that was that he became angry, because he thought that he didn't want to be famous in that way or be put in such a position.
Of invulnerability, but then he proved very vulnerable, a heart attack and he was gone. There's been speculation about that. It's this kind of meeting, Edward, of that crusading, anti-racism, anti-ultra-right, anti-totalitarianism crusader, and then he picks up sort of the model of Pippi Longstocking, the
mm-hmm,
Swedish,
exactly.
Wonderful Swedish children's story. He told Lasse Winkler that his goal with Lisbeth Salander was to update Pippi Longstocking. Imagine her as what? As a character in a very, very contemporary setting. And so there you go. The Nazi hunter meets Pippi Longstocking.
Yes, and you know, one of the very interesting things about it is that he saw Pippi Longstocking and he said, here's an outsider, here's somebody who our society today could not embrace, would have a great deal of trouble with, and she would be an outsider and, you know, could quite well in Sweden be institutionalized for some of her sort of contrarian qualities. Mm-hmm. And so he sort of channeled that into Lisbeth Salander. And, you know, one of the really interesting aspects of it all is that, you know, it was more than his expo concentrated really on anti-fascism and racism, principally, sexism and misogyny. But his instincts, I think you see quite strongly, are actually against anyone who abuses their authority. Throughout the books, you see that there are characters in a position of power subjecting people to torture that they should not, subjecting them to things that really should not happen, and abusing their power to make these things happen. And I think that it's a strong instinct to sort of help those individuals, to speak for those individuals who society cannot embrace, who cannot speak for themselves, who really need an advocate. And I think that that's how he saw himself. And in his life, he actually had some public... you know, he also appeared in England. He spoke to Scotland Yard and participated in a publication there called Searchlight.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Swedish thriller series launched by the girl with the dragon tattoo, its punk packer Pippi Longstocking-style heroine, and its Nazi-hunting author, the now-dead Stieg Larsson. A little music there from the movie version, opening in the U.S. today. Swedish-language film opened earlier this year in Europe. It's grossed about $100 million so far. Here's a little bit from the film version. It's in Swedish, I guess. English subtitles. It was today in U.S. theaters. Actress Noomi Rapace plays the genius hacker and social misfit Lisbeth Salander. Here it is in Swedish.
Mikael Blomqvist, även känd som Kalle Blomqvist, ett smeknamn han fick efter att ha klarat upp några bankrån på 80-talet. Sen dess har han varit en offentlig person utan några större hemligheter, så det mesta där är artiklar som vem som helst kan läsa.
Men han har alltså hemligheter.
When did Swedish make it to the top of the heaps? There's Lisbeth Salander saying Michael Blomqvist got the nickname Kalle Blomqvist, as in from the Pippi Longstocking story, when he cleared up a bank robbery in the 80s and so on. You know, he's a public figure without any big secrets. Her client there says, but does he have secrets? She responds, everyone has secrets. And we're in the thriller mode of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. We're joined by Lasse Winkler. He's the editor-in-chief of the Swedish version of Publishers Weekly, Svensk Bokhandel. Also by Edward Kastenmeier with Vintage Anchor. He edited Stieg Larsson's books in paperback for the U.S. market. Millions of readers in this country already. Lasse Winkler, is there a big problem with Nazis, neo-Nazis in Sweden?
Well, you can say that there it comes and goes, the problem, in the meaning of how big it is. Around a couple of years before Stieg Larsson wrote these books, there was a huge problem with the Nazis killing people and beating people up badly in the open, in the public. And he was afraid of, not afraid of them, but he was afraid that they would come to him or anybody at Expo so they couldn't write. And he lived on a hidden address with the woman he lived with for over 30 years. And 1 year before, 2 years before he wrote these books, the police caught a Nazi murder, and they found Stieg Larsson and Eva Gabrielsson's pictures and address in the murderer's house. So he had a right to be a bit afraid, and they were a force to be reckoned with that time. It's not the same right now, but it was.
All of this has led to a controversy over the proceeds from these books, Edward, which is a lot of money at this point. But he never married her because he was afraid if they were married and registered that marriage with an address, they'd be tracked down, her life would be endangered. And now it's his father and brother who are the recipients of the many, many millions who have come from these huge sales globally.
Yes, that's correct. Apparently in Sweden there is no such thing as common law marriage, and so in Swedish law there was no way to recognize the fact that they had lived together for 30 years. And there is, you know, it seems like there may be something of a rift between the two sides of the family, but that is currently the status.
Lasse, what about this Pippi Longstocking business? I mean, Americans know that as a children's story. Of course it is for Swedes as well. But there are aspects that are picked up in the heroine of this story. I mean, Pippi Longstocking is supposed to be, what, like 9 years old or so? This is the series by Sweden's Astrid Lindgren. She's supposed to have superhuman strength. She can lift a horse with one hand. She mocks adults a lot. She's very hard on pompous and condescending adults. Lisbeth Salander has all these traits and many more, but she's also lives a pretty rough life, very unorthodox. Have Swedes been tolerant of seeing their, children's story heroine, Pippi Longstocking, turned into this kind of fierce, violent, morally centered but angry young woman?
I think that person is the biggest reason why these books are such a huge success. He told me when I interviewed him that in the late 80s, he was sitting and talking to one of his friends. At that time, he worked at something like AP or,
a news service.
What do you call it? A news bureau?
News service, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, news service, TT in Sweden. And they were sitting one evening and writing an article about books from their youth, where the heroes were two young children that were detectives in these books, about 30 of them that came year after year after year. And they were talking about this and saying, what if we put these guys in Sweden today and make them grown up? What would happen? So he played with that idea, but it didn't work out. So he said, 10 years later, I was thinking about this. Then I decided that what if I take Pippi Longstocking, make her a grown-up in Sweden today? What would happen? How would people look upon her? And how would everybody react? And that is the basic for Lisbeth Salander. As a counterpoint, he took Kalle Blomqvist, which is another of Astrid Lindgren's heroes in another story,
mm-hmm.
which is more, to be honest, more boring person in that respect.
And makes Kalle Blomqvist into her Michael Blomqvist here, the kind of a dogged journalist who doesn't get up on ferreting out what's really going on. It's his nickname even, and he's kind of embarrassed by it in the books.
Yeah, but Kalle Blomqvist as a child in Astrid Lindgren's books was a detective, mm-hmm. one of those snotty young boys, you know, that knows everything or
right.
tries to know everything.
Here's a little bit from the 1969 TV series of Pippi Longstocking. This is, of course, originally from the Swedish author Astrid Lindgren. Here's a scene where, everything's kind of bigger than life with Pippi Longstocking. She's always got money. Her father's gone. She's superhuman in her strength. She's sassy. Here's a little bit. She goes into a candy shop and stumps the clerk there with an unusual request.
What can I get for you, my dear?
38 pounds of all sorts of sweets.
38 pounds? You mean 38 different sweets?
No, I asked for 38 pounds of all different sorts. I can pay for them.
Good gracious, a gold piece. Why, this will pay for all you could possibly carry.
Good.
But 38 pounds? I'm not sure we have sufficient sweets. I'll go and see what's in the stock.
All right,
for you.
Then we'll eat some while we're waiting.
Yes, eat as much as you like. Do. I mean, a gold piece. Gracious me.
Pippi Longstocking from 1969. It kind of sounds sweet in that youthful voice, but Edward, as Stieg Larsson imagined this grown-up Pippi Longstocking, she's a very tough customer. She doesn't grow up to be sweet. She's abused as a girl and grows up to be a very angry 90-pound heroine.
Well, I think that's true, but part of it may be children can get away with a lot when they're quite young, and as they get older, society impresses their opinions on them more and more and tries to force them into certain molds. And I think in Stieg Larsson's mind, Lisbeth Salander would not fit into that mold. She would not fit into what society wanted her to be. She had a particularly cruel relationship with her father, and some of these things forced her into more and more of an outsider because, like Pippi, she stood up for herself. And when society tries to press you down and you continue to stand up for yourself, it often moves to a breaking point. And I think that's what happened in Lisbeth Salander's life as Stieg Larsson saw it, and that once she was outside of the mainstream and once they had decided that she had real issues, Swedish society continued to try to keep her outside.
Michiko Kakutani with the New York Times reads these books and talks about the main characters and says they transcend their genre and insinuate themselves into the reader's mind through their oddball individuality, their professional competence, and surprisingly, their emotional vulnerability in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and right on through. We've got lots of listeners who want to join us. Let's begin to bring them in. Burlington, Vermont. Maura, you're on the air, Maura.
Hi. I loved these first two books so much that I ordered the third one, The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest, from Amazon UK, and really enjoyed
goodness,
that
no.
Well.
now you're into Edward's rice bowl there, but you're ahead of the pack. It's coming out here, what, in a month or two, Edward?
Yes, we're coming out this summer.
Why did you love it so much, Maura? Why?
They're just so exciting and engrossing, and in addition to just being suspenseful thrillers, they're so political and just so well written. And I have heard some rumors about that there was a fourth manuscript on his laptop when he died. And I wonder if you can talk at all about that, because it definitely seems like there were some unanswered questions in the third book. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Maura. Edward, a fourth book on the laptop?
There are rumors of a fourth book on the laptop. I suspect there's probably less material than, you know, there's probably a small amount of material, but we just don't know. We don't know at this time what exactly exists, but I doubt those are.
Lasse, what do you know? He planned.
What do you think,
10,
Lasse?
I've read. What do you know, Lasse?
He told me that he had started on the fourth, and he had about between 150 to 200 pages or something like that. This friend who told me about it said he had about 250 maybe, and they were on his laptop.
Mm-hmm.
But
given,
I guess. Mm-hmm. The father and the brother doesn't have them. I don't know if Eva Gabrielsson have them. I suspect someone else have them. Maybe the Expo people, because it was their laptop. And the people who asked them, as far as I know, don't want them to be used.
Though one can imagine the pressure to cash in eventually, to try and get someone to complete them or even publish them partially if his longtime partner or his magazine has them. I mean, as a publisher, Edward, wouldn't you salivate for 250 pages, even if unfinished?
Well, you know, I think eventually there may be enough impetus to try to figure out a way, if we had that much material, to do something about it. But that remains to be seen. As, you know, as we've established here, nobody's really seen the material, and it's hard to know in what state it is. I'd hate to think that we would do anything he would be uncomfortable with a manuscript he was never able to finish. So I think we would, you know, approach that cautiously.
Lisbeth Salander, already with kind of mythological status, the actress playing her in the movie coming out today in the U.S., Noomi Rapace, spoke about the challenges of playing her in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. People are so focused on her, she said it was a little bit intimidating. Here's a bit of her talking about playing Lisbeth.
It was like, you know, a suicide mission in a way, because everybody was talking about Lisbeth and who's going to play Lisbeth, and everybody loved the book. So it was, you know, the pressure was just, you know, it was so hard, and it was in the papers, in the blogs, and everywhere, every day. So it was like I had to force away, you know, everything else, and I had to close my eyes and my ears and go into some kind of bubble with the director and other actors and just ignore the pressure.
In the papers, in the blogs, and today, actress Noomi Rapace there in theaters in the U.S. with the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Let's go to Franklin, Tennessee, and Robin. Robin, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I have just been thrilled with these books. I read a lot, and I have thoroughly enjoyed how well written they are. You cannot put them down. And I'm very saddened to find out that he had passed away when I got my hands on the first book, that he had passed away before the books were published, because it seems to me that some of the best writers pass on and leave us hanging out there. It's very sad.
It's hard when you fall in love with a writer to know that he or she's already gone and they're, well, there won't be more created, that's for sure. Robin, thanks for your call. You know, Lasse, there's been speculation. Christopher Hitchens wrote in the Vanity Fair about Stieg Larsson and sort of raised the possibility that there was some nefarious explanation for his death, that maybe there was some hint of murder here. Or was it just a heart attack and that's that? The idea was that maybe he had challenged too many powerful people who didn't want him to keep writing in such a way about the ugly side of life, maybe life in Sweden, and someone wanted him gone. Any truth? Any credibility?
No, none whatsoever. He actually, I think he worked himself to death. A lot of people do that, believe that in Sweden. A lot of his friends believe that. He wasn't in a good shape. Mm-hmm. He was overweight. He smoked constantly. And when he slept, nobody knows, because he worked all the time. I just think his heart gave away, and that's the way it looked like when he died, because he just fell to the ground when he was walking up the stairs, and he was on the sixth floor, and he was going up to the eighth floor, and, mm-hmm. and they took him into the paper and to Expo, mm-hmm. and there he died.
Wow. Running the magazine, chasing down neo-Nazis, and writing these thrillers all night, that's a pretty heavy schedule. Salt Lake City, Utah, Terry, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a question regarding the statistics that are presented at the beginning of each part of the first book, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if, in fact, they are accurate, and how he was able to go about obtaining such statistics. My second question is about the coffee consumption in Sweden. Is the society that heavily caffeinated?
Right. Everybody's always drinking coffee. Lasse, what about it? The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo has some remarkable and disturbing statistics about the abuse of women, the trafficking of women, and so on, grounded in reality?
I don't remember the statistics from where I stand now, but he was a thorough journalist, and I'm assured that the statistics are right, because when I read them, I didn't think about it, and I'm always very, very. I think it's important with real figures, real numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to coffee, it's true. Everything is true. We're one of the countries that drink the most coffee in the world, I guess. I think the Finnish people drink more, but then I guess Sweden comes second or third or something like that.
You got to stay warm. You got to stay awake on those long winter nights. Stieg Larsson's family was from the north of Sweden, kind of the terrain of storytellers, Lasse Winkler.
Pardon?
The north of Sweden being the traditional sort of home of many storytellers, with long winter nights and fires to sit round and tell stories.
No. No.
Oh, I'm reading that all over the place here. Okay. Well, we'll test that theory another time. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Swedish thriller series launched by The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. It's punk, hacker, Pippi Longstocking-style heroine, and it's Nazi-hunting author, the now-dead Stieg Larsson. We've been joined from New York by Edward Kastenmeier. He's edited the paperbacks coming out in the American market. The first two out, the third, The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest, coming out in a couple of months. Lasse Winkler is with us, editor-in-chief of Svensk Bokhandel. It's the, kind of the Publisher's Weekly of Sweden. He joins us from Sweden. And right now from Cranberry, New Jersey, we're joined by Niels Arden Oplu. He's the Danish movie director whose movie, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, opens today. Limited release in the U.S., New York, L.A., San Francisco, Boston, Chicago, Philadelphia, and Washington. Niels Arden Oplu, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much.
So you had a big bestseller on the book side. What was it like to turn this now much loved and much discussed first book into a movie?
Well, it was a lot of hard work. I could say. I think that the fact that it became such a popular book, when we started writing on it or working on to break it into pieces and make it into a film, mm-hmm. It wasn't as popular as it is now, of course. And while we were working with it, every week we just got new numbers in about new territories and how successful it became. So there was, of course, a certain amount of pressure to do this right.
How did you go about casting the actress who plays Lisbeth Salander? You've got Noomi Rapace. She's quite a lovely actress. I think of Lisbeth as compelling, but not necessarily lovely.
No, but I mean, the thing is that when I came up to Stockholm to cast this film, I thought that I've casted four feature films and three major TV series in Scandinavia before with mm-hmm. a lot of success. But I thought really to find an actress that could play Lisbeth Salander would be, like my Waterloo of casting. I thought it would be impossible. I had seen a picture of Noomi and seen a clip from a small art house film she had done, and I knew she had done some strong work at theater too, but she wasn't known in Sweden at all. I thought she looked like a strong actress, but I also thought she was too beautiful for the part in some ways, because you don't really see Lisbeth as a good-looking girl, although she is sexy in her own odd mm-hmm. kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
But when I worked with Noomi, I called in for rehearsal, and I worked with her for 2 hours, and I just found that she had an amazing, strong energy, like a really dark, strong energy that makes her unpredictable on screen and gives her this kind of seductive quality. It's like a ticking bomb kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're always waiting for her to blow up on somebody, and that's very entertaining.
And how did you describe to her that sort of the essence of Lisbeth Salander, her challenge as an actress? What did she have to catch with Lisbeth?
Well, the thing is that this whole dark soul, this whole inner life of Lisbeth, that all the emotions that are kept under lock in Lisbeth and makes her, a broken person, a violent person, she has a lot of darkness inside her, but yet she's a fighter, and she never, she never becomes a victim. She never gives up, no matter what you do to her, violence, rape, abuse. She'll always come back and take revenge. So, I mean, it's not like we were talking about one single thing. We're really talking about the whole complexity of what this character should contain. And then of course it gets down to what do you show in the actual situation, like when she's sitting opposite Bjurman the first time, and he puts her totally under administration and takes away her money and stuff. What does Lisbeth feel in that particular moment? So that's the stuff you discuss. It's a lot of her looking for the right emotion in the right moment.
This is her rage when her sort of state overseer, to whom she's kind of committed as a ward, begins to seriously mistreat this young woman, and things get pretty wild in a hurry. Let's get more callers. New York, Bosade, you're on the air, Bosade. What did you make of the series?
I was really disappointed when I finally read it because I was very excited and there had been so much buzz around it. But, Larson provides such a great opportunity for us to actually talk about sexual violence against women, and he points out all these horrible facts about what's going on in Sweden and it happens around the world just amplified.
Mm-hmm.
But he just completely ignores it in the end, and the whole story just talks about it ends on capitalism and like, oh, let's punish the people who, ruin the stock market or whatever. And it's like, are those greater crimes than, raping and incest and all the other horrible things that goes on? I mean, the Nazis were prosecuted. the, I don't forget his name, but the Swedish guy who did all the bad stock things, he was prosecuted. They were publicly shamed, and they all had to come to terms with their crime, and they all had to be punished.
Well, Sadie, not everybody's read it, but let me just ask, because you're quite right. I mean, I agree, Stieg Larsson's brimming with things that upset him, and that range from violence against women to all kinds of economic injustice, I guess, as he'd see it. But in the first book, certainly, there's an awful lot of emphasis on violence against women. That's the thread that runs through the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah, there's tons of emphasis on the violence, but instead of seeing the perpetrators actually get kind of prosecuted and publicly, and the public be made aware of all these horrible things they've done, you know, instead we focus on the victims, and it's all about, hey, you know, I'm not going to actually talk about what happened to me. I'm going to enjoy kind of my shame, and we'll all just be really proud of you for being such a strong woman, and not actually saying, this is what happened to me, and I want like the public to know that this is a bad person who did something to me.
Of course, it doesn't end well for one of the real bad guys there, perhaps. But let us pick it up, Niels. What about it in the book, in your movie? Do you think you make light of violence against women?
I certainly wouldn't say that. The scenes between Lisbeth and Bjørman are very horrific, and it was very important to me that those scenes didn't become entertainment, but really was a moment of horrific, you know, movie, being in a movie house for the audience, because, you know, when Lisbeth gets raped, it's rape is a horrific thing. It should be portrayed horrific and being horrific. But I think to say to what Stieg is showing in his book, and also it's in the film, is that Lisbeth takes the law into her own hand.
Mm-hmm.
Lisbeth doesn't trust that if she goes public, that the society will protect her, or even put the bad guys to jail. She doesn't think that she in a open battle can win against Bjørman. She has to do it in her own way,
mm-hmm.
And that is that. I think that in some ways criticizes Swedish society even more, because she doesn't trust the mechanisms and the law that should protect her. And I think that a lot of women, which has violence done to them, feels that they don't trust the law and the authorities that should be there for them in that terrible moment.
The society is stacked against them or stacked against justice.
Yeah, just the fact if you are a woman and you get raped or have a violence done to you, and then you end up in a court case and you put on the stand, and your whole past is rolled out. I actually had a woman at a screening with this film come up to me and talk about this, being a victim of violence and being put on the stand and having your whole past rolled up and used against you. I mean, not only have you then been through a really violent thing done to you, and then you have to defend yourself against, somebody who's trying to let the bad guy off. I mean, that can be a really, really tough situation.
Lasse Winkler in Sweden, our caller Bosse in New York, though, is quite right that the author, Stieg Larsson, has a very broad agenda here. It's not just about violence against women. He had a deep background as a young communist years ago, kind of Trotskyite, and that economic, a kind of rage at what he sees as social injustice is also very evident in these books, Lasse.
Yeah, well, I think he had this broad perspective in everything he did. You shall not forget that this was the third book of a planned series of 10.
Yes.
And how you expose these questions and how you use your protagonists or heroes, whatever you call them, when you build up the story and you come to solution. I mean, three books, they were only the start. And these three books, you did finish altogether because they were a story in themselves. They belong together, he said.
The fourth
book he was going to write was something else.
It almost seems as though he intended, by the time he got to 10, a full-spectrum critique of society and its injustices, the ambition and moral outrage in these. Very striking. Mary in Simsbury, Connecticut. Mary, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm from Finland originally, but I'm of Swedish descent, and so I concur about the coffee intake.
Right.
I wanted to point out that I've actually read the books, and my mother saw the movie. I missed the movie because I had to fly back to the States when it opened in Helsinki this past summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed the books, and I wanted to point out that it's very similar. My mother and I both felt that the main character, Lisbeth, is very similar to the book Miller's Sense of Snow, and kind of a alternative culture, goth, punk woman. And I don't know if anyone else has made that connection with which also became a major movie.
Right. Peter Hoag's Smilla's Sense of Snow. It's been some years now, but Edward, what about it? Is there a genre here? Do you see the linkages?
I think there are a lot of linkages in a number of Swedish crime novels. I mean, you know, it all goes back to Mad Sherval and Per Wallu, sort of the people who almost founded the Swedish mystery 40 years ago now. And they, interestingly enough, wrote a decalogue. They wrote 10 books. And so I think Stieg Larsson took that notion of talking about Swedish society in a 10-book series, may have taken it directly from them. And theirs also very much was about Swedish society and its problems, as was Smilla's Sense of Snow, and as are all the works of Henning Mankell. I mean, there's a very strong sort of social instinct across the board in Swedish mysteries, and there are a lot of similarities in the issues that they try to address, the problems of their society and how they try to address them. And I think for us, it's really, you know, the problems are universal. They're problems that we can see in our own society, and yet there's a certain, not quite comfort, but it's easier sometimes to criticize another society than it is your own. And I think that makes all of these books very accessible here and very appealing, and it gives you a new way of looking at your own local problems in a more international context.
Niels Arden Oplu, what about it? Do you see a kind of a Scandinavian attitude being expressed in these books, maybe in your film? Is the world getting acquainted in the big sales here with something they didn't understand before about an outlook on the world?
Well, I more think that it gives a different perspective on what is our traditional picture of Scandinavian society, maybe particularly on Swedish society, because you know, being a Dane, of course, I can criticize Sweden
right.
all I want. It's
right.
not going to cost me anything. But
but
I think Sweden is a great society in a lot of ways, but they also see themselves through this humanitarian society, equal to women, and you know, kind of utopia. And it can be difficult for them to see their own society with critical eyes. And I think it was very important for Stee to take that, to reveal that for them, to pull that away from their eyes so they could see sides of their society that they don't want to, you know, necessarily face. Like, I don't think, like, Sweden ever had a cultural confrontation with their links to Nazi Germany in the 30s and the 40s, which is the thread of the book that goes up through the story and suddenly influence present time, which I thought was really a really cool thing, and I really wanted to keep that in the film, as well as I wanted to keep the thing about violence against women in the society. All those things, it was important to keep in the film because they it gives the film an edge that is so it doesn't only become an entertaining film, but it becomes an entertaining film with an edge.
Yeah.
And I strongly believe that you can communicate important subjects in something that's still mass entertainment.
A very sharp edge of history right there. Bobby in Asheville, North Carolina. Hi, Bobby. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm probably one of the few people in the world who didn't like this book.
Okay. Tell us why.
I disliked it so much, I did not read the next one. I read The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
I understood that maybe I must be missing something here, because I know a lot of people did like this, but I found Elizabeth, while she certainly had a horrible life, and, you know, she was courageous, I found her very dislikable. I felt sorry for her, but I found her kind of disgusting in a way. I didn't like Michael. He was just kind of, he just didn't seem to get anything, you know. He was kind of out there. But the thing I think that bothered me the most was that, yes, there were lots of causes and so forth in this book, but maybe too many. And I didn't see any cohesion, really, with bringing them all together. I shouldn't say there wasn't any cohesion, but there was some, but I couldn't get into the plot. I couldn't get into the book. It took me ages to get through this book, and I read a lot.
Yeah, Bobby, we're going to have to scratch our heads about that and what made all those other millions and it missed you. But then books are not going to please everybody all the time. But I appreciate your call. Lasse Winkler, Stieg Larsson clearly was not trying, I guess, to make a very likable exactly character in Lisbeth Salander here. She's not easy to like at first blush.
No, but that's the point with her, because if you take a person like he did, for example, Pippi Longstocking then, mm-hmm. and put her in a modern Swedish society, what will happen? And that's what came out of that. And he stayed true to that idea. He wasn't there to make a heroine that everybody would like, or you know, he didn't make a Hollywood figure of her. He stayed true to his idea.
And maybe to his moral outrage, which will catch some readers and not catch others. Lasse Winkler with Svensk Bokhandel, joining us today from Gothenburg, Sweden. It's very good of you to be with us. We're very grateful to you. Thank you for your time and thoughts today.
You're welcome.
Niels Arden Oplu, Danish movie director of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, opening in, Swedish with English subtitles, right, Niels, today in the U.S.?
Yes.
Look forward to seeing it, and congratulations to you for bringing it out here. Thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And Edward Kastenmeier in New York with Vintage Anchor, bringing out the paperbacks in the USA. The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest comes out when, Edward?
Comes out this summer in July.
This summer, and no doubt lots of readers.
April.
April. Okay, not Bobby, but a lot of other readers no doubt lined up to see it. Thanks for being with us today, Edward.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks so much for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.